Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Here go. Let it bump, though.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knock Podcast. I am Dan Favalli, coming at you, as always, with my super-duper, incredibly awesome, times awesome, esteemed co-host, Andy Bailey. We're here today to talk about quarter poll grades for the Eastern Conference, as he giggles in the background. We unfortunately do not have a guest. We had one lined up, and they were unfortunately able to go today. We're just going to leave it as a mystery guest because I'm going to let Andy reveal it anyway, and we hope to have them on soon again. So you're stuck with us two for today. Before we get going, however, just want to remind you to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. You guys have no idea how much that helps us and how much we really appreciate it. We're kind of nearing 50 ratings and reviews. Like, that would be spectacular if you could help us get to that benchmark and beyond as we continue this podcast journey. So again, get on iTunes, please rate, subscribe, and review to us. We might be running another contest soon, but you should really just get in on the rating, subscribing, and reviewing now. You can also follow us on Twitter at Hardwood Knox. I'm at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E, and Andy is at Andrew D. Bailey, as always. So with all those little housekeeping tidbits out of the way, the question that everyone really wants us to get to every single podcast, how are you, Andy?
I am excellent. I was giggling because when you first started these ridiculous intros for me, I would try and like recap them after you were done, but it's getting more and more difficult every time. Like, I've already forgotten all of the superlatives that you laid on me today.
You're welcome. You know what? So I'm not going to lie. I stumbled halfway through and forgot where I left off. So I had to go awesome times off, awesomer, because I couldn't really come up with a better superlative.
I appreciate whether they're grammatically correct or not, they work for me.
I'm going to run out of steam on them at some point because, you know, it's hard. It's like you said, you couldn't even keep track of them.
No. Like you said, Eastern Conference grades, we did nearly 2 hours on the Western Conference. And that podcast is obviously still available for anybody who wants to go back and listen to that one. We went deep dive on all 15 teams in the Western Conference, like Dan said, with Dan Clayton. So that's still available today. It's just going to be me and Dan. Maybe that means a little bit more expeditious version than we had on Tuesday. I think we're just going to surprise each other again, like we did last time with the teams that we pick. And I'm going to start it off with the team that we were kind of talking about before we started recording, and that's the Charlotte Hornets, who I expected to be much, much better this season. In the offseason, as you know, I took the top 10 players from every team in the NBA, and I looked at their wins above replacement projections from 538, and I added them together for the top 10 for each team. Charlotte was second in the East, according to that. And I'm like 100% certain Cleveland was first, but I don't remember for sure. I just know Charlotte was second because that's the one that surprised me. In addition to the projections like that, I've thought Kemba Walker for the last couple years has been one of the best point guards in the league. I was kind of ready for a Dwight Howard resurgence because Steve Clifford has done interesting things with big men in the past. I think he made Al Jefferson probably the most useful he's ever been in his career. I like Nicholas Batum a lot. It just seemed like a lot
still?
Of those pieces. No, I said I liked.
Oh, sorry.
It just seemed like so many of those pieces fit together so well. And in practice, it just it has not come together, obviously. They're one of the most surprisingly bad teams in the league for me. As we're talking today on Thursday, they're currently 10th in the Eastern Conference in net rating. They're outscored by 1.1 points per 100 possessions. It just absolutely plummets when Kemba Walker comes off the floor. There's really nothing saving that bench right now. I expected this team, maybe I didn't expect them to finish second, kind of like 538 did, but I thought they would firmly be in the playoff hunt. It just seemed like every one of those pieces fit together to me, and it just hasn't in reality.
Yeah, they've regressed and.
Oh, and by the way, I don't think I said my grade. I gave them a D.
Ooh, you were pretty. I didn't go that low. So, I mean, my grade for them right now, you could easily justify. Oh, wait, I gave them a D too. Excuse me. So I gave them a D. I'm like getting ready to just crap on you for what you said. I'm right there with you because Nicholas Batum still hasn't been back all that long, but it's been long enough to know that he's not the playmaker that they need to kind of bridge the gap between those stays when Kemba Walker's on the bench. And he wasn't that guy last year. He turned the ball over a lot in the pick and roll. Their offensive numbers weren't great when he ran the offense without Kemba on the floor. This season, I think you can say quite clearly their second best player has been Jeremy Lamb, which is like, okay, cool, but it's
and you would think if they got that breakout from Jeremy Lamb that would just be gravy.
They do have some interesting lineups, and I think if Malik Monk, if we could fast forward into his career like 2 to 4 years, maybe they would be fine, because it just seems like they need that extra guy, because Lamb and Kemba Walker, like, you see it when they're playing alongside one another, the Hornets are just absolutely dominant. They can kind of, I think Walker is one of the most underrated defenders in the league at the point guard position, but they can.
Yeah, he's a little pit bull.
Yeah, Lamb can still switch onto the assignments that they don't want him to cover, and you need that third guy so that you can always have mostly two of them on the floor at any given point. Batum is obviously supposed to be that player. He's a borderline max guy right now, and he's not even close to becoming performing up to that snuff. I'm going to hold out hope because their defense can still be okay. They're 12th in points allowed per 100 possessions, I believe, and they haven't been great since Steve Clifford kind of came out and said, we need our defensive identity back. They're still good. They don't send opponents to the free throw line that much. They rank 4th in opponent free throw rate. They're getting to the line a lot, which I think helps Jeremy Lamb, career high free throw rate. You have Kemba Walker there as well. There's obviously people who are going to foul Dwight. And probably the biggest harbinger for me, which makes me think that maybe they're just that one additional additive playmaker short, when Lamb and Kemba Walker, this was leading into their loss to the Warriors, were on the floor this season, they're outscoring opponents by 10.6 points per 100 possessions. And that's the 15th best differential of 162-man lineups to exceed 410 minutes this season. So, like, that's legit. And they're one of, I think, only two or three teams that weren't the Warriors or Rockets in that top 15. Like, the top, it was just basically Houston and Golden State up and down, and then there was a Milwaukee duo sprinkled in there. I think a Boston duo was there. So those are all good signs. But, like you said, they were supposed to be firmly in the playoff picture. And if we get to a point where it's around Christmas and their offense still hasn't turned, they're not shooting nearly enough threes. They're using post-ups a lot again, which is a symptom of having Dwight Howard, it seems like. He's not embracing that Andre Drummond-like deference when it comes to post-ups. And, I mean, you can sometimes work it, but at the same time, like, allocating 8 to 9% of your offense to post-ups when you don't have a nice passer like Al Horford or DeMarcus Cousins there, it just doesn't – I don't think it's sustainable. So my question to you now after that long-ass rambling, do they consider blowing it up this year at any point? Like, if it becomes clear, they're still going to be in the playoff picture when we get around New Year's just because the East is wonky like that. But when you look at the top 8 right now, 7 of those teams seem like locks, and I don't want to name them because we have to grade the rest of them. The only one that doesn't is the Indiana Pacers to me. And yet you still have the Knicks and the Heat kind of lingering outside the playoff picture. And even the Magic and the Nets have better or comparable records to you right now. So I think they should consider it if we move, you know, a few weeks ahead to January and they're just still not firmly in the picture. But I'm curious as to what you think, just because Charlotte has gone to great lengths to stay mediocre.
Yeah, so I think they've almost reached a point where it's like anything on the table territory, which would include what you just laid out, blowing it up. The thing that I would look to as like a reason for optimism for them, that two-man lineup, like you said, when Kemba Walker and Lamb are on the floor, they're really good. When Kemba Walker's on the floor, regardless of who he's playing with, they're pretty dang good. The one stat that just blows me away with Charlotte is he's played 739 minutes this season, and Charlotte's plus 95 in those minutes. He has been on the bench for 370 minutes, and Charlotte is minus 131 in those 370 minutes. So to me, they have one, two, you know, maybe even three or four pieces that make sense and could be like the core of a solid playoff team. And maybe they're just one more player away who can make them at least like passable when Kemba's on the bench. If you had one other playmaker, like you said, if you could fast forward Monk 2 years, and maybe you can fast forward that by making a trade, by being a buyer at the trade deadline February. I don't know who that guy is. I just think that, like I said, they're almost at like all options on the table territory. And I think one of those options might also be to be a buyer and see if you can get somebody who can play minutes and sort of hold down the offense when Kemba's on the bench. Cause it's obvious right now, it's obviously not Monk. It's obviously not Michael Carter Williams. It hasn't been Batum. It's just not on the roster right now.
Michael Carter Williams has played some randomly good minutes for them. And I get the sentiment of being a buyer. My swing for the fences trade for them would probably be to build a package around Monk and a future first to try and get Goran Dragic out of Miami. And then you run him and Kemba together in the starting lineup and have Lamb come back off the bench. Maybe that's something if Miami decides to become a seller. But I don't...
If they could duplicate like that two-point guard stuff that they had with Jeremy Lin a couple years ago.
Yeah, so that would be an option for them. But if that's not out there, I think you even have to explore, hey, what's the market for Kemba when he signed through next year on one heck of a deal? Because you're going to have to reinvest probably max money or close to it in him in 2019. Yes, Dwight Howard comes off the books then as well, but you're still locked into Batum. You still have Michael Gilchrist on a reasonable deal, same with Marvin Williams. But Jeremy Lamb's going to be a free agent after next year, and then just all of those market value deals start to add up, as we've seen with the Heat now. So I think the next time we do this at the halfway mark, the Hornets better have picked, like, I'm not talking like an identity direction, a franchise direction, whether it's really go all in on this season again or start to sell off.
All right, you're going to pick the next one.
Oh, this is fun. You know, since I mentioned them, let's go with the Indiana Pacers. I don't think that anyone predicted 25 games through the season the Pacers would have the sixth best offense in the NBA.
No.
They have just been astounding to me. And the even more, like, incredible thing is they don't take shots necessarily that make you think they're going to be a good offense. And you know I'm a big shot profile guy. And right now, Indiana is 24th in percentage of shots combined coming at the rim and from the three-point line. And the only teams like that are getting less of those, a smaller share of their looks from those distances, are the Spurs, Wizards, Knicks, Timberwolves, and Kings. And the Wizards... the Timberwolves are the only team of that bunch that are like truly in the top 10 of offensive efficiency right now. So that's kind of mind-boggling to me. But they just have, you know, they probably could stand to shoot some more threes, but they just have guys who are shooting the lights out from downtown. Like, it's absolutely absurd. Bogdanovic, Corey Joseph, TJ Leaf, Domantas Sabonis, and Victor Oladipo are all canning at least 40% of their three-pointers. Darren Collison, Miles Turner, and Thaddeus Young are all above 35%. Lance Stephenson has been a reasonable three-point shooter as an over 30%. And listen to this, only the Warriors and the Utah Jazz are hitting a higher percentage of their catch-and-shoot threes right now. I guess we have to believe,
and the Warriors,
it's sustainable.
Jazz have the two greatest shooters of all time.
Joe Ingles is on pace to have one of the best high volume three point seasons in NBA history. FYI,
he's amazing. Yeah,
every shot he takes, I just expect to go in. speaking of Oladipo, let me get to Sabonis really quick. He just goes through stretches where he decides not to miss. I always feel like he's 7 of 7 or something ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's just, and then Oladipo has morphed into one of the NBA's best tough shot makers. He is shooting better than 46% on pull-up threes That's the third best mark among 56 players who have attempted at least 30 or more pull-up trays. And there are four players who are averaging more than 1.1 points per isolation possession, minimum 45 touches in those situations. Tyreek Evans, which, wow, James Harden, LeBron James, and Victor Oladipo. And you just factor in the body of work that he's been able to do in transition, that the Pacers are really good at getting out on the break. I think there's only, like, I don't know, two or three teams that are getting a larger share of their offense in transition. All that stuff just adds up to this good offense, and I have no choice, it seems, but to give them a B+. Like, I know they're not that far over 500. I know they just barely beat the Bulls the night before we're recording this, but when you look at basketball ratings, simple rating system, which ranks teams according to point differential and strength of schedule, they have the Pacers billed as a top 10 team in the league. Like, this is not – they didn't win the Paul George trade. You don't win those trades. But, like, wow. So I've just been while some of the stuff is going to fall back down to earth, like their certain three-point shooters and their shot selection, I do think is going to have to give a little bit at some point. But it looks like their offense might be for real. And if you're going to have a top seven offense in the East and their defense isn't very good, I don't see a path to them getting better really either. They're 19th in points allowed per 100 possession, and they're good at limiting opponent free throw attempts, which might help them stay around 15th. But if you're going to have an average or slightly below average defense in the East while posting elite offensive marks, you're going to contend for probably a top five seed.
Yeah, so Victor Oladipo has been insane, if I can get that sentence out. I'm going to tout a lukewarm take that I had from June 30th on Twitter. As bad as the East is, Oladipo and Turner might still make the playoffs. And I'm feeling much, much better about that very passive tweet that I sent out in June. So you said they didn't win the Paul George trade, and I probably agree with you, but I'm also not sure that they lost it.
They didn't get hosed.
Yeah. That's... like, Victor Oladipo, just objectively speaking, has been the best player in that trade this season, at least to this point. Like, you can say Paul George is a better basketball player, but to this point, based on what both guys have done, it's Victor Oladipo. And Domantas Sabonis, like you said, has been amazing too. There was a stretch, maybe the first like 10, 15 games of the season, I think his true shooting percentage was like close to 70. Like you said, he just seemed like he never missed. His like points, rebounds, and assists profile is in the same like general neighborhood as Nikola Jokic, which is insane. Having a big man who passes just changes everything in my mind. I just love passing big men.
Wow, so you really don't like Rudy Gobert, huh?
Hey, he throws some nice no-lookers. He's like one of those guys that will like look away after he throws it.
I call that the Will Barton.
Yeah, he does that a lot too. Victor Oladipo, he is currently 16th in the NBA and wins over a replacement player. The only guards in the Eastern Conference who are ahead of him are Kyrie Irving and Kyle Lowry. And we could, depending on how you want to define Ben Simmons, he's ahead of Victor Oladipo too. So arguably one of the best guards in the East. It's I can't say it enough. He's been unreal. I think Darren Collison has quietly been really good too. Miles Turner it's taken him a little bit of time to find his offense this season, but defensively, they're a different and better team when he's on the floor. There's a lot of good things happening with this team. I don't know if we got your grade for them.
I gave them a B+.
That's exactly what I gave them too.
Yo, look at us in lockstep, 2 of 2.
Yeah. Unless you have anything else on them, I'm going to jump to our next team.
I'm excited.
Give me a moment. I'm going to go with the Celtics. And my grade is an A+ for them. I believe they still have, if they don't have the best record, they're tied with Houston in the loss column. Am I right?
They have the best record. It's by, they just have a bunch more wins. They've played a bunch more games right now.
Okay. So they are actually second in the Eastern Conference in net rating, but not far behind the Toronto Raptors. But obviously, like we said, I think I said this in the last podcast too, Wins and losses is the ultimate measure, of course. For them to be 22-4 after they started 0-2, first of all, that injury to Gordon Hayward in like the first quarter of the first game of the season, I mean, there isn't like a tougher way to start a season. That was one of the biggest free agent signings that team has ever had.
Right.
He was poised. I mean, he seemed like a perfect fit. The whole Brad Stevens reuniting with Gordon Hayward narrative. I mean, it was all about Hayward this season. That's not true. It was all about Hayward and Irving, because the Kyrie Irving trade was obviously huge too. But to lose that guy in the first game, it just seemed like they're done. And we did a basket brawl episode for NBA Math. And I think both of us adjusted their over-under to the 40s. I think I said like 40.5, and you said maybe like 44 or something.
Mm-hmm.
They're obviously way, way, way ahead of that pace right. that we kind of expected from them. 22-4, like I've said a couple times. The wings, the young wings, Jaylen Brown second year, Jason Tatum first year, have been both really, really good. Jason Tatum leading the NBA in three-point percentage at 51.9 is just absurd. Every time I check a box score for the Celtics or watch like a half of their game, it just seems like he never misses. That just blows me away. Al Horford, for at least the first like 10, 15 games, was Boston's best player. I love the way they run the offense through him. He's become a better rebounder, which was, you know, the big criticism on him in Atlanta and over last year in Boston. There's just so many things working right. Brad Stevens is obviously a wizard. I think a lot of people are talking about D'Antoni and Popovich now for Coach of the Year, but Stevens should very much be in that conversation still. I'm pretty sure they still have the best defense in the NBA too, which is not easy to achieve when you're playing four or five guys who are rookies or second-year players, rotation minutes.
And you turned over like two-thirds of your roster over the offseason.
Yeah, it's like a completely new team. All these things are factors that would suggest a team is going to be bad. Not that they're going to be one of the best in the league and have the best defense. And I wish I could remember who made this point, but somebody said maybe Brad Stevens is like perfectly equipped for this because you have a lot of roster turnover every year in college. So maybe he was a little bit more equipped to handle it than guys who've only had NBA experience. But anyway, long story short, I've been so impressed with this team. They're really, really good. They've more than convinced me over the course of the win streak and since then, and I went with an A+, like I said.
I'm going with an A++++++++ because you laid it out with the Gordon Hayward case. Like, I wasn't necessarily high on this team even with Hayward because of all that roster turnover, and I wasn't necessarily sure that Kyrie Irving was the greatest fit for them, particularly with Hayward. That'll be interesting to watch next year how they integrate those two, but I think now you have to take the blind faith benefit of the doubt stance and just assume it's going to be great. But they've been, like, even the most uncalled for expectations, they've just been absolutely sensational. And in the clutch, they're like crazy good. They're leading the league 13-4 when neither team is trailing by more or leading by more than 5 points in the final 5 minutes. Jaylen Brown owns the NBA's second highest crunch time plus minus. And Kyrie Irving shooting over 60% in the clutch. Jason Tatum is shooting 63.2% in the clutch. Out of 60-something players that have attempted at least 12 shots, that ranks first. Jason Tatum,
that's
leading
crazy.
The NBA in crunch time field goal percentage. According to NBA Math's defensive point saved, I'm going to start getting random just to try and prove like how ridiculous this is. Daniel Tice.
I was hoping you would say that.
He saved more points on the defensive end than Dwight Howard. Semi Ojele is just like a ridiculous, a general nuisance. Marcus Smart owns the best net rating among every Boston player to appear in more than two games, despite laying enough bricks to rebuild the Empire State Building. Al Horford, like you said, had to be a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year early on. I think you still throw him in there. Kyrie Irving is having the defensive performance of his life. And even people were pointing this out at the beginning of the season, that one of his flaws on the defensive end too was that he still helps when you're quote-unquote one pass away, so that he's leaving a guy open who can get off a shot quickly. Even that has improved since then. I'm just like, the Celtics are scoring like a top six offense when Kyrie Irving's on the floor, which kind of puts to bed the notion that he can't lead a quality offense without LeBron James. And this is what gets me too. He leads the team leading into that game against the Mavericks. He led the team in deflections per 36 minutes, Kyrie Irving.
Crazy.
I think Marcus Smart might have the edge on him now. He does. I just looked it up. But now Kyrie Irving is second. And but it's just Brad Stevens is, like, to me, by far and away, coach of the year right now. And I don't know that it's particularly close. The Celtics have just been spectacular, and they deserve an A++++. The Cavaliers are still the favorites in the East, in my opinion, because the question I always come back to is, how do you beat LeBron James 4 times in 7 tries? And the answer is, you need to be the Warriors.
Yeah.
And the Celtics just aren't the Warriors right now. But like, man, the only thing worth monitoring for me and the other random note, and I'm at fault and guilty of this, Marcus Morris, is – just living proof that quality defensive rebounding wings can't play alongside Andre Drummond. I thought I just wasn't impressed by his defensive rebounding effort in Detroit. And it has to be by design, where not only does Drummond gobble up all those rebounds, but you're not even going to try and get them because he's gobbling up so much.
Yeah. And look now at what happened to Avery Bradley's rebounding numbers.
Right.
And
Marcus Morris is second in defensive rebounding percentage for a team that ranks 4th or 5th in defensive rebounding percentage overall, 1 year after ranking in the bottom 5. Just everything about this team is incredible. The one note I have is that for all the people who think they're going to go after Antetokounmpo eventually or Anthony Davis, or they're just waiting for that next top, let's say, 15 superstar to reach the trade block, they're going to need to overpay someone this summer to do that. Because as we pointed out on one of the previous podcasts, Jason Tatum is their 4th highest paid player right now, and you to like cobble together all that salary to acquire a star, unless you're going to give up Hayward, Irving, or Horford, which I don't necessarily think you want to do in that situation, you're going to have to combine all these different pieces just to make a splash. So maybe it's Marcus Smart. I can't talk today, Andy. It tells me maybe it's Marcus Smart.
Morris and Smart goes together pretty well. Marcus Smart.
So, but maybe it's Marcus Smart this summer in restricted free agency. You overpay him just to have like a nice trade chip. Like, what if you just maxed him out for two years? Like,
I don't know if that's a nice trade chip.
Oh yeah, right. So like, but what if you gave him like, would he sign like a 2 year?
25 or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you might even have to go 336 if you're going to do that. Would he sign like 2 years and 30? Like, could you get away with that? The Amir Johnson deal, we could call it, basically, just to sue. Or maybe you overpay Terry Rozier when he's a restricted free agent in 2019, or you overpay Marcus Morris a little bit when he's a free agent in 2019 as well. That's going to be something to monitor with them. But otherwise, their future and present are just collective aces.
Yeah. I've been, like I said, very, very impressed with that team. You've got the next one for us.
Let's go to – can we just get the Bulls out of the way?
Very, sounds so enthusiastic about the Bulls. Yeah, let's do it.
They're scoring 96.1 points per 100 possessions, which leaves about a 2-point gap between them and the 29th place Sacramento Kings. And like, I just, you know, that's kind of ridiculous. Just, and like, for context, the 20th ranked Charlotte Hornets and the 27th ranked Miami Heat are separated by less than 2 points per 100 possessions. So that's how bad the Bulls have been on offense this year. I don't know what else you could expect, though, which is why my grade for them ultimately ends up at a C. You don't have Zach LaVine. I don't know. I might even go C minus because of the Bobby Portis, Nikola Mirotic stuff.
Like, yeah, that's bad.
This front office is a disaster. I'm still not ready to sell out Fred Hoiberg, though. Lauri Markkanen has been good. Chris Dunn has been really good. He looks like he might give them a prospect for the future at that point guard position. And so now they don't really have to kind of...
He's been maybe their most impressive player to me this season.
I go back and forth between him and Markkanen. I think I've said this before. Go look up Dirk Nowitzki's sophomore per 36-minute performance and compare it to Lauri's rookie per 36-minute performance. And it's just that I find it very interesting. But yes, Dunn has been fantastic. And now, you know, the offshoot of that with Dunn kind of improving as a passer and a shooter is that you don't have to force Zach LaVine into this heavy playmaking role. which is when he comes back, which is going to be good for him. We'll have to see how they integrate Mirotić. Their defense isn't very good either. Robin Lopez is probably a guy they just need to keep around because I don't think the trade market for him will be very high, and he's also a good presence to have in the locker room. I'm going to ultimately go with a C-. I'm changing it now from a C to a C-, because their front office is like a piece. But I don't know what else. They gave Fred Hoiberg the worst roster in the NBA, and he's coaching them towards the worst record in the NBA. And we talked about him maybe being on the hot seat. The only way for me that makes some semblance of sense is, one, if the players truly don't respect him, and I think it'd be a little bit hard to find that now when you're dealing with one of the NBA's five youngest teams, or two, if Gar Foreman and John Paxson are trying to kind of enhance their own job stability by kind of saying, oh, well, you know, we're going to have to hire a new coach, and you really have to give this rebuild a fair shake, so come talk to us again in 5 years or something like that.
So while you were talking, I was tempted to change their grade from a D- to an F. I stuck with D- because, like you said, we really couldn't have expected much more than this from this team this season. There are a few things that make me think, unless they are deliberately trying to lose, you just can't do some of the stuff that they're doing. And I know a lot of tanking teams will say, We're going out there and we're competing every night. We don't want to lose. But Justin Holiday leading your team in field goal attempts at 13.3, that to me is evidence that you want to lose. He's shooting 36.6% from the field. Paul Zipser still getting rotation minutes at this point, starting 7 games. He is, I think, objectively the worst player in the NBA. I haven't run the numbers in like a week, but you can take pretty much every catch-all metric from around the internet, NBA Math's total points added, box plus minus, win shares per 48, ESPN's real plus minus. He's like dead last in everything, and he's still playing 17 minutes a game. He's shooting 32% from the field and 27% from three. And you might ask, well, who else do they play? I'd say play Denzel Valentine 35 minutes.
Denzel Valentine's been good at points too.
Yeah, I was going to say he's been solid, but he's shooting less than 40% from the field too, so maybe there really aren't any other options. Like I said, when you were talking, Chris Dunn's probably been the most impressive guy to me. I have a habit of jumping off the bandwagon on young guys way too quick, and I think I did that with Dunn last year. This season, he's averaging 12 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists, basically, shooting 44% from the field and 44% from three. He's a different player than he was last season. Lauri Markkanen was super impressive to me in the beginning part of the year. But he's hit more than a rookie wall. It's like a rookie fortress all of a sudden. In his last 9 games, he's shooting 31% from the field and 27% from three. I would expect some kind of a bounce back from him because I do believe in what he was doing early on in the season. But and ultimately, the other thing I was going to mention, is, and you did mention it, was the whole Bobby Portis, Nikola Mirotić situation was – that's about as big a mess as I've seen in a training camp since I've followed the NBA closely. I looked up the injury and I can't remember what it's called now. But that specific bone in a person's face, breaking that is like life threatening. And Bobby Portis sat out 6 games or something for that. And I still don't know like the full background of it, but I just feel like that was so horribly mishandled, and maybe it'll all be fine in the end. If Mirotić, he's back sooner than I expected him. And,
Friday, you know, when this publishes, I think he'll be debuting Friday.
Yeah, everybody's saying the right thing, so maybe I'm making more of it than I should. But there's just so many things with this team that are kind of weird to me. But like I said, I can't really fail them because this is kind of what we should have expected.
Well, can we just I would like to note that a D- is failing. Like, I'm sorry, America, but like a D- is failing. It's failing.
We're going to have to get some like responses on that. Because I feel like a D passes in some places, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, you should probably send out a live podcast poll on Twitter right now or something. So three quick notes on them, actually. Someone's getting – Mirotić is probably – he should demand a trade closer to January when his free agency restriction is going to lift. Because it's like you said, that injury was a pretty serious one. And he can say the right things, but I saw Casey Johnson at the Chicago Tribune – wrote today that even though there was that picture of them fist bumping on the bench, even though Mirotić says he's not mad at anyone, even though he says he's accepted Portis's apology. They still haven't really hashed it out, and you just can't have that in the locker room. Miritich, he's going to be 27, right? So he's not – he doesn't.
Yeah, he was kind of an older rookie when he came over.
Right, so he's not going to factor in to your future when he turns – he turns 27 in February just after his trade restriction lifts. Probably just –
He's somebody who could help a contender too. I think he'd be an interesting like first big off somebody's bench.
I would like to kind of see him on the Blazers a little bit to change up their
that would be
their
really interesting
look. Like a picture Noah Vonleh, but good on offense, you know?
Yeah.
Something that's going to break there. The other thing is actually a semi-serious one. Like Chris Dunn, I want to see if his three-point shooting is going to hold because – 39 of his 41 three-point attempts have come open or wide open this season. Like, so defenders are – 44 of his three-point attempts have been open or wide open this year. 37 of his 44 three-point attempts have just been completely wide open, and he's shooting about 46% in those situations. They're basically – defenses are Andre Roberson-ing him or Ricky Rubio-ing him. And
yeah.
If he's going to keep hitting those, they're going to adjust. But we've seen we've even seen Marcus Smart go through these like hotter stretches when defenses are going to abandon him, usually in the playoffs. So I'd like to see if that holds. And the final thing I'll say is it's hysterical that they gave Cristiano Felicio $32 million over the summer to average under 5 points per game. That's just –
yeah.
I find that hysterical, and we need to call out NBA Math's founder and editor-in-chief – Adam Frommel, who thought that that was a good deal and predicted Cristiano Felicio would be a breakout player because he has not been. And if you're not going to break out on this roster, it's not happening.
It's amazing how many big guys have earned millions and millions of dollars just for being big. I'll always remember the Sagana job contract from the Mavericks.
Did they also pay Eric Dampier too? That was
the Dampier contract was crazy too. I think I've got the next one. I am going to go – I think this was my next lowest grade. Actually, the Hornets were my next lowest, and this was the next lowest after them. The Heat, who I'm giving a D-plus to. This is another team that I was kind of expecting more from this season, like I said, with the Charlotte Hornets. This is kind of proving the theory right that it's more about what you do over the course of the entire season than what you do at the end of the season. And that's what I was kind of leaning on with my optimism with Miami was that 31-9 closing kick or whatever it was. I just thought all those pieces fit together pretty well. Maybe Justice Winslow takes a step forward. It turns out that a lot of those sort of middle of the road players that they signed to big deals are middle of the road players. And maybe they're closer to the team that they were in the first half of the season than the second half. My one note on them, I found this in my daily stat thread this morning. So there's 286 players qualified for the minutes leaderboard. Tyler Johnson is 100. He's in the bottom 170. He's in the bottom like 100 in every major catch-all metric. Deion Waiters is in like the bottom 20 of every catch-all.
Waiters has been fire in crunch time, though. That's the only time he decides to make shots.
Somebody made a pretty funny reply to me the other day. It was like, maybe they should just play Waiters the last 5 minutes of every game and sit first 43.
Yeah,
because he's dreadful at every other point in the game. They're paying Tyler Johnson almost $40 million over the next 2 years, and they're playing Waiters almost $40 million over the next 3 years. They are, unless they can make a trade, which is feasible, they're tied into a roster that might be like borderline 9th, 10th place.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. They need to, if I was them, I would look to try and sell off on Justice Winslow now because I don't really know that he's going to be able to help them. The fact that they have one of the four lowest free throw rates in the league, despite having all these quote-unquote drivers like Dragic or should be Johnson or Waiters or even James Johnson. And Tyler Johnson's going to make more than Goran Dragic starting next season for 2 years. That's going to be
it's
a problem.
Crazy.
And I think you look at him and then you look at Waiters and then you look at James Johnson a little bit who's been up and down this season. It's possible they're going to end up having three of the worst contracts in the league on their books. And that's going to make moving forward from here really difficult. Getting Hassan Whiteside back from his knee injury will, I guess, help the defense, but their like defense isn't their primary problem. He's going to make them an above-average defensive team. They've been spectacular on defense with him on the floor, but their offense has been crap, and it's just been crap in general throughout this year, and I don't know that they have the tools to become buyers at the trade deadline, which is going to be a major concern for them. And I think both of us had them penciled in pretty much as a playoff formality at the beginning of the year. Maybe they still
get
there.
Yeah, I was real confident.
Because they could still go. They went on a stretch last year, a tear, so maybe they could do that again this year. You really never know, but they need to do something on the offensive end. They're taking the right shots, but they need guys to hit like a higher percentage of their threes. If you really look right now, and I'm not including Hassan Whiteside, who's just randomly 2 of 2 from beyond the arc this year, by the way, spectacular. they just have like they don't have any high volume, like really above average guys besides Wayne Ellington and Dragic. Like their best, like look at their. So let me name Hassan Whiteside, Kelly Olynyk, James Johnson, and Okoro White all rank in the top six of 3-point percentage on the Heat. And, like, that's not – you know, Johnson takes him enough, and so does Olynyk, I get, but, like, that's not okay. So this team, it would be great if they could have someone who basically blended, like, Justice Winslow's defense with Deion Waiters' crunch time offense. That's the player that this team needs.
You know who leads that team in box plus minus?
I do, but I'm going to let you say it because I was looking at their page before.
Yeah. It was James Johnson for most of the year, but I just checked it while we were talking, and Olynyk. It's now Kelly Olynyk.
Johnson's been weird because I feel like when I watch him, he hasn't been good, but then I'll look at the numbers and I'm like, you know, yeah, I like him. His turnover percentage is still way too high.
Yeah. His scoring hasn't been quite as consistent as it was at the end of last year, but he still gets all the like ancillary stuff. Like you said, the turnovers are up, but he'll usually get you some assists and rebounds and blocks and steals. That's why his number is up there with the box plus minus.
Oh, and the one final note on them is James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and even more problematic. James Johnson and Kelly Olynyk have higher turnover rates than they do usage rates, which is not, you know.
Whoa.
That's not.
Yeah,
okay.
That's not ideal. So does Josh Richardson. While we're at it.
And yeah, so. Like that's not that's
he's another guy that I thought would take a step forward this year, and he's just been objectively not very good.
So does Bam, by the way. So they and he's played some
they
minutes
just
this year,
coughing it up a lot.
So you gave them a D plus.
Yes,
I gave them a C minus.
Okay.
Are you ready to talk about the? Let's go Washington Wizards.
All right, let's do it.
They're barely in the Eastern Conference playoff picture right now. They're 13-11. I know John Wall has missed time, which is, you know, kind of a red flag unto itself. I don't know if they need a shakeup at the trade deadline or they're just going to get better once Wall returns. They're still kind of treading water, 10th in points scored per 100 possessions. Their defense is 11th in points allowed per 100 possessions. So they're, like, in this weird sweet spot, but I don't know. Like, it's just you watch them, and they don't look like the real deal. Like, they just don't look – they don't look like it right now. And they've been linked loosely to DeAndre Jordan. I don't know if that's a trade that they should be interested in. They have some really potent lineups when they're fully healthy, and you kind of run with Gortat in the middle and using Kelly Oubre and Otto Porter and then Beal and Wall or Markieff Morris. You mix and match, and those have always been good, but – the bench still isn't really spectacular. Scott Brooks has tried some different things where Kelly Oubre at one point was leading these all bench lineups, which just, you know, that wasn't working. Kelly Oubre has been good. I've been kind of impressed by him. Markieff Morris continues to be that sort of up and down player.
Yeah, he's really inconsistent.
Right, particularly on the defensive end where it just seems like if he's not getting he's probably been better on the defensive end this year than the offensive end, but if he's not like involved on offense, it seems like he's just not going to give it to you. on defense either. So I don't know. I really like Thomas Satoransky. He's had like some random, just awesome moments, and I'm a firm believer in him still. And he might be, because you have him under contract through next year, maybe that's why you can think about using Kelly Oubre as DeAndre Jordan trade bait, who looked spectacular against the Timberwolves on Wednesday night, by the way. And the trade I'll throw out here, because I threw it out in the previous podcast, was if you give up Jan Mahimi, Jason Smith, the 2019 first-round pick, and Kelly Oubre for DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams, that's a trade that I think the Wizards have to consider, because they could really, you know, DeAndre Jordan just gives you a little bit, you move Marcin Gortat to the bench, and, you know, you're paying him for a couple more years. He's instantly probably the best backup big in the league, and DeAndre Jordan gives you something different defensively and has a rebounder, and then Lou Williams is just huge for your creativity off the bench. I mean, picture running Lou Williams, Marcin Gortat, and Kelly Oubre Jr. in your second unit. That would be...
If they could swing something like that, they would instantly be like a top three contender, I'd say, in the East.
I
like that trade a lot.
I'm also kind of wondering, is their offense going to hold? I mean, like, let's forget about, like, John Wall not playing right now, but they're taking, like, not enough shots at the rim. And from three-point range combined, especially from three-point range, they need to be jacking more. They are 26th in combined share of shots coming at the rim and from beyond the arc. And this was after last year where they had that better shot profile. So you've regressed on that front, and I just wonder how long they'll be able to kind of prop up that top 10 offense.
Yeah, I actually went with tell me your grade on them again. I don't know if I missed it.
I went C minus, just because I understand, and the really quick explanation would be I understand that John Wall hasn't been playing, but at like this point, when you have Bradley Beal and Otto Porter, it seems like it should be better.
Yeah, I have him at a C plus, so same general range, I guess. They're currently fourth in the Eastern Conference in net rating. They're plus 1.8 points per 100 possessions. The reason I'm giving him a higher grade, I think, is what you already mentioned, John Wall being hurt. I think I give him a pretty big pass for that. They've been quite a bit worse since he's gone down, understandably so. And I think the main thing that you can point to as the reason for their struggles, and it was the same last year, is the bench. When Beal, Porter, and Wall are on the floor, they're outscoring teams by 12 points per 100 possessions. The main guys are doing fine. I think Otto Porter is more than living up to that contract that he had. He's shooting 47% from three season. It's just crazy, yeah.
His defense has been great, too.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen him hit, like, dribble pull-up threes in transition now. Like, he has evolved so much as a shooter over the course of his career. Bradley Beal just had a 50-point game the other night, or 51. I don't remember exactly what it was.
51, yeah.
If they could beef up that bench, like you talked about, that's a scary team. I don't know if they can. You think they can pull off a deal like that without giving up Kelly Oubre?
Maybe, if it's just Jordan and you're not getting rid of Jan Mahimi, but then you're probably getting rid of Jason Smith and Marcin Gortat. So I don't
honestly think they're probably better. They're still probably a little bit better if they have to give up Oubre and they get Lou Williams and DeAndre Jordan back. Lou Williams has been
spectacular. And having his bird rights for this summer, that might be valuable too.
He's been so good for off the bench for 3 or 4 years now. And that's one of the main things they've lacked, is somebody who can sort of keep the offensive flow going when Bradley Beal or John Wall has to sit. So that would be a huge, huge difference for me. I still went with the C plus instead of something higher, because I do feel like that the talent in that top three should be better than, what are they right now? 13 and 11.
Right.
I just felt like they would be more firmly in the playoff picture at this point in the season. And maybe they will in a few weeks, but right now that record, that close to 500, just feels like a slight underachievement to me.
The crux of my C minus kind of lies with, over the last 10 games, Bradley Beal, Tim Frazier, Gortat, Morris, and Otto Porter. So the starting lineup minus Wall, but with Tim Frazier, they made 8 appearances, played 137 minutes. They're scoring under 100 points per 100 possessions. Ooh. Like you have Bradley Beal in there. You have Markieff Morris, who's supposed to be kind of a nice off-the-bounce guy at points, even Otto Porter as well. But the Beal thing is bigger to me, and that's where my C-minus comes from, is like that lineup should be able to – they've been good defensively. That lineup should be able to float your offense. The positive note, I will say, is while I'm not crazy when Scott Brooks goes all bench, over the past 10 games, an all bench unit of Mahinmi, Meeks, Oubre, Sedaransky, and Mike Scott has made 6 appearances, logged 47 minutes, is scoring almost 107 points per 100 possessions and allowing under 100 points per 100 possessions. So, like, maybe there's some – Mike Scott has always been like, oh, this guy can play basketball. His decision-making is awesome. Time. We love Kelly Oubre Jr. Mahinmi's okay as a rim runner and protector when he's healthy, and I'm still on the Sedaransky bandwagon, and he might be the guy just because you know Oubre Jr. is going to be extension eligible this year and that you're going to have to pay him within a summer. But Sedaransky, at his price point next season, maybe he's the reason that you can talk yourself into moving Oubre as part of a bigger deal. But if I'm the Clippers, I would consider a deal built around Gortat, Jason Smith, and a 2019 first for DeAndre Jordan. I think you have to add more salary in there, but I'd consider it if I were them.
It's definitely time for them to blow it up. All right, I think we're back to me. Before I reveal what team I'm going to do, I'm going to give you a quick update on our poll.
Oh, you did it. I didn't even see it.
15 minutes in, we've got 240 votes. The question is it D failing or passing? 52% say fail, 48% say pass.
That's still 50.
So right now you have a marginal lead.
52% is still not enough. So this is
James Hansen at Hampson James says D's to degrees, baby. Mark Russell Pereira says it's passing, but any grading system worth a crap doesn't use them.
All right, then.
It's technically passing depending on the level of schooling, but I consider it a fail. Jose Samaniego. So I know you were all dying to hear an update on that.
I'm happy that you did it.
With that out of the way, I'm going to move us on to the Milwaukee Bucks. So this is another one I almost changed the grade while talking. And live right now, I'm going to go ahead and change it. I had them at a C+. I'm bumping them up to a B-.
Generous today.
I kind of felt like that when I was laying these all out, actually. I was like, am I being too nice? Anyway, I get all the criticism with Jason Kidd. Their defensive system is, at this point, it's like flat out stupid. Everybody knows what they're doing. And they continue to do it. It's just crazy. And coaches and players are even like talking about it in interviews. They're like, we know what they're going to do and we're exploiting it. So to keep like pounding your head against that wall is crazy to me. But I think Giannis Antetokounmpo is, I think it's probably safe to say he's been one of the 5 best players in the league this year. Since they made the Eric Bledsoe trade, when Bledsoe, Antetokounmpo and Middleton are on the floor, they're outscoring opponents by 14.3 points per 100 possessions. So that group is very much working. I'm very curious to see what Jabari Parker looks like when he gets back and how he'll fit with that group. And maybe they're another team that's been rumored to be interested in DeAndre Jordan. What would that look like? I asked this on Twitter the other day, but a lineup of Bledsoe, Middleton, Antetokounmpo, Parker, and DeAndre Jordan, like, is that enough to seriously push the Cavaliers? I honestly don't know where I would stand on that. I would probably say no, and that's what most of the responses said too. But that's a really interesting group to me. I think there are a lot of things to like about what this team's doing, so I went ahead and gave them a B-.
You're a kinder man than I am. I went ahead and gave them a C-.
Ooh.
In large part because it's like you kind of need to adjust that defensive system already. They're 12th in points allowed per 100 possessions since the Bledsoe trade, which is fine. But when you're going to also hover out just outside the top 10 in offensive efficiency during that time, like it just – I get it. You're forcing turnovers, but you're – according to Cleaning the Glass, they're 30th in frequency of field goal attempts allowed at the rim on defense. Like, that's just – that's like almost 39% of their opponent shots are coming at the rim. That's the highest.
That's bad.
That's bad.
And that's what happens when you blitz pick and rolls the way they do. I don't know how they don't see that.
Right. And how does this team not play faster is my other question.
Yeah, you got to get Giannis running as much as you can.
And on the chances that they've been like kind of running, they haven't been especially good. So they're fourth in pace according to Impredictable after a defensive rebound, but they're 20th in offensive efficiency in those situations. So it's like even when they're getting out on the run, they're just not doing enough, and their whole half court offense isn't anything spectacular. They need to. I get the interest in DeAndre Jordan, and he probably helps you with your rim problem because the Clippers, despite having a shitty defense, they have a pretty good shot profile at the defensive end. But you need to, and maybe they have the personnel to do this, particularly when Parker comes back, but, like, shoot the damn ball from three. Like, just shoot more threes. Like, I get it. You need Antetokounmpo to do his thing, but shoot more threes. Like, that's where I'm at with them. This team should not be 22nd in three-point attempt rate. It shouldn't. You have Middleton. You have Brogdon. Eric Bledsoe can kind of shoot. Antetokounmpo might need to just take the Marcus Smart approach and just fire away anyway. You're a floor spacer in that regard. I'm not impressed with anything they've done, and so much of their success seems founded upon Antetokounmpo can just make something out of nothing. And I just don't.
Does this feel at all like a team that's the right coach away from being really good? Like, I don't want to say they're the next Warriors, but like the Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr upgrade was obviously massive. I wonder if somebody else could unlock this group and send them to another level.
I agree. I actually think that that's a great way to put it. And yes, because if you put Brad Stevens like as the coach of this team,
this team objectively has more. Like Antetokounmpo is more talented than anybody. Well, maybe not more like purely talented than Kyrie, but he's the best player in either group.
I'm right there with you. So they if Kidd doesn't make some adjustments, they kind of need a new coach. And one of the things, like, maybe if you get DeAndre Jordan, it forces you to run some more pick and rolls too. Like, I honestly don't know. Like, shoot more threes, run more – like, just do more stuff. Like, do something different. That's where I'm at with the Bucks, and I'm pretty sure Bucks Twitter might agree with me. Don't they tend to be a pessimistic bunch on Jason Kidd?
I was going to say, they're more negative about Jason Kidd than I was just now. They can't stand that guy.
I think we're back to the next one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the Toronto Raptors, who I think deserve an A. I mean, just look at where they are in the East. They have the third best record, and Kyle Lowry wasn't good for part of the season. They dealt with an injury to Norman Powell. Their front court rotation is just so weird. Like, you're getting good minutes from Siakam and Poeltl, and you're not relying on Jonas Valanciunas as much. OG Anunoby has been spectacular, and Dwayne Casey has bought in hard to like their new offensive identity. 70.6% of their shots are coming at the rim and from beyond the three-point line. That ties them with the Cavaliers for the fifth most share in the NBA. Like, that's big time, considering we know how poor they were at this last season and even just in seasons past. Their free throw rate has taken a little bit of a hit as a result, but, you know, whatever. You still have, one of the best offenses in the NBA. You're fourth in points scored per 100 possessions. And the defense has been sneaky good. Ninth in points allowed per 100 possessions. And the big thing is leaving Anunoby in the starting lineup, that resulting unit has not been good defensively overall, but they're really starting to come around over the last like 10 games or so, because that Serge Ibaka, Valanciunas front court is probably one of the least versatile defensive front courts in the league. Like, Ibaka can't switch. Mm-hmm. Valanciunas isn't a good rim protector, and Anunoby kind of helps offset that, and then you can just run him in these other lineups. The Raptors are defending like one of the league's best unit whenever Anunoby's on the floor. And I looked this up yesterday because I was ranking like surprises we just didn't see coming, and I had Anunoby fourth on that list of my top 15 surprises. He, more than 90% of his looks are coming within 3 feet or beyond the arc. More than half of his total attempts have been catch-and-shoot threes, which he's burying 44% of the time. He just fits for this team, and he's been spectacular, and is just another reminder at, like, damn, how deep is this rookie draft class? And the final note on the Raptors, too, Kyle Lowry is starting to come around. They got good minutes from Dellen Wright before he was injured, and I just – they're so good. And even Anunoby, he wasn't even supposed to be ready for the season. And like here he is. In any other year, he's probably like a top three rookie. But because Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum exist, he's not. So it's just it's mind-boggling to me. And he, according to NBA Mat's total points added, by the way, he ranks as one of the four most valuable rookies this season on a contender, a quasi-contender. So
I listed him as a top four rookie a couple weeks ago, and Twitter predictably went insane over that.
Who were they mad like that you put him over? Lonzo Ball?
I think the Kuzma? most was Kuzma, actually, was what I was going to say. Lakers fans are very passionate about
that. Maybe
their...
if Kuzma played defense, that wouldn't have been as easy of a decision.
This is completely unrelated, but if you didn't see the argument and I gotten in with some dude about Lonzo and Ben Simmons last night, you should check it out when we're done recording.
Oh, I'm now that's going to happen.
Because it was fun. I gave the Raptors an A as well, and I almost gave them an A plus. I felt like I wanted to differentiate the Celtics from the rest of the conference.
Should have went with the triple plus like I did.
The Raptors have been awesome. They lead. I mentioned this when I was talking about the Celtics, but they lead the Eastern Conference in net rating. They're outscoring opponents by 7.6 points per 100 possessions. Kyle Lowry, like you said, he got off to a really slow start. He has more than recovered. He has pulled himself all the way up to 10th in the entire NBA in box plus minus. And I searched this. I don't have it in front of me, but he's like a top seven player in that metric basically since the day he joined the Raptors. The only people ahead of him are like the super, super, superstar names that you can think of, like Curry, Westbrook, LeBron, Chris Paul. I think he was sixth or seventh. Long story short, he's been ridiculous.
It makes people uncomfortable when you talk about how Lowry may be a more valuable player to a winning team than John Wall. Like they get really bent out of shape.
Well,
but it's
same
kind
thing
of the
with,
truth.
It's the same with him and Kyrie Irving. I don't think it would be that hard to argue that Lowry's been the best point guard in the East for 3 or 4 years now. He's so good, and I don't get what makes people so hesitant to accept it. This season, his true shooting percentage is 63, even after the slow start. It's just, and he's a pit bull on defense, which is how I described Kemba Walker earlier too. Sorry for the repeat, but he's just been awesome. DeMar DeRozan continues to do what he does, and I think one of the main reasons I like Toronto this year is that front office has perfectly they have like a two-track team going right now. They have these awesome veterans that have been together for a long time and have lots of chemistry, and you know, DeRozan and Lowry and Valanciunas, this core has been in the playoffs a bunch of times together. But sort of developing behind them is a bunch of really intriguing young guys. Jakob Poeltl looks good. Like you said, DeLon Wright looked really good this season. OG Anunoby, just from an efficiency standpoint, has been one of the best rookies in the league. Lucas Nogueira is still pretty young. I think he's 25, but he's among the league leaders in defensive box plus minus every single year. They have
I was so upset when that muscle tear in his right calf was reported.
Yeah, that's rough. They have so much brewing behind those main guys too. So this is a team that I think is set up to compete now. And even as this current group sort of fades into the sunset, they're going to continue to be interesting because they have a lot of interesting players.
CJ Miles has been fine too. We should probably mention him.
Yeah,
shooting 39% from three.
Yeah, he's been awesome. That bench is really good again, like it was last year.
Do you think they should make a play for Marc Gasol?
That trade that you laid out in your article at Bleacher Report was super interesting. The three-teamer that put Gasol on the Raptors. If he's motivated and he's like the player that he was maybe 2 years ago, that's a super interesting team. Lowry, DeRozan, Ibaka's still there in that trade, right?
Yeah.
Ibaka, Gasol, and then I guess Norman Powell starts at the three, or CJ Miles, or OG Anunoby, I guess.
He's
gone in the trade, right?
Yeah, and that's the – so I made it up because, like, Gasol to the Raptors is, like, that's just one of the more popular scenarios.
Yeah.
I'm not for doing it if you have to give up Anunoby, which you probably do, because unless you really think Bruno Caboclo is going to come around. He's officially – he should be here, right? This is his fourth year. He was 2 years away from being 2 years away, so he's here.
And that's the kind of deal that, like, it makes sense right now, but it would almost certainly have to blow up that two-track thing I just laid out.
And I don't think Gasol is as good defensively anymore. He's just not as mobile.
And he's now 33 years old, right?
Yeah, his age 33 season. I think he might still be 32. But, yeah, so I don't think they should unless it's, you know, unless it's the dirt cheap situation like Eric Bledsoe. Like, they just, you know, you could pick him up without giving
up
any.
Yeah, if you could get him for, like, one guy in a pick, that would be really interesting.
I'm sorry, but can we do some breaking news on the podcast?
Yes.
The Sixers are, per ESPN.com, Zach Lowe, the Sixers are nearing a deal to send Jahlil Okafor to the Brooklyn Nets.
Hey, that was one of the destinations I liked for him.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like, haven't we talked about this? They're this hub for career revivals, and I don't know if you put a bow on the Raptors. I don't want to take your turn for picking a team, but maybe we should just move.
Yeah, on. I was going to say, let's do...
guess who they're sending, per Shams Karina.
I just got the Shams notification.
That's
Tell
sad.
Me what it is.
It's Trevor Booker. It's built around Trevor Booker.
Oh, that is sad. I really like Booker there.
Booker actually might help the Sixers.
But
I
was
going to
say, he's awesome in Philly.
Booker is actually like good though. Like I love like.
Yeah, he's been awesome ever since he left the Wizards. Just really versatile hustle guy. He does a lot of things I like.
Yeah, so the Nets.
Let's talk. I was going to say our next two teams should probably be Nets and Sixers then.
All right, you want to start with the Nets?
Yeah. Let's see, where did I have them? I gave the Nets a – I'm bumping them up right now too as we talk. I'm going to give them a C+.
All right.
Even as I say that, it feels like I might need to go higher, but –
I gave them a B, FYI.
They're minus 3.1 points per 100 possessions this season. Spencer Dinwiddie has been awesome. I think since D'Angelo Russell went down and he became the starting point guard, he's averaging like 16-8, something like that. I just love the way that they're building this team with almost no assets to speak of when Sean Marks got there. The fact that they now have two potential building blocks. I don't know if I want to call Jahlil Okafor a potential building block because I didn't have any stock in him initially and I would have sold it by now if I had. But having said that, I think Kenny Atkinson and this team is like the perfect situation for him to maybe revive his career and uncover maybe some of the potential that he had coming out of Duke. I think they were already absolutely doing that with D'Angelo Russell before he got hurt. His three-point percentage was weirdly like really low, but he was doing everything else super well. He was scoring almost 30 points per 36 minutes, passing the ball well, getting rebounds. He looked awesome. I just love the way Atkinson is sort of and Marks too is sort of reviving careers. And as I'm speaking, like I said earlier, I feel like I might need to bump him up even more, but. Yeah, I'll go ahead and do it. I'm going to say B- for the Nets.
I'm going B for them, excuse me, because just the injuries they deal with, Russell's out, and like they're still finding guys who can perform. Jared Allen looks good at points now. I even want to give them a B+ for this trade because Trevor Booker probably doesn't factor in to your future, and you know you have high character veterans who can sort of float the culture that you've built, like Damari Carroll, who is still there. And I mean, even Nick Stauskas, who they're getting in the deal as well. Like, there's just, you know.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, because they had a match. I guess you know the salary matching for salary matching purposes. So like, Nick Stauskas could be their next Joe Harris. Like, look at what Joe Harris has done. He can do some stuff when he's driving to the basket, and he's a great 3-point shooter. And their development of Spencer Dinwiddie has been incredibly spectacular. Like, it's just he was supposed to be a top prospect when he was coming in to the NBA, but that ACL injury really hurt him. But you look at what he's doing with the Nets, and I'm going to toss out some stats there because I've been working on a feature for him on him for a while, and he continues. When I find these numbers after watching him, I continue to be blown away. He's not shooting well within 5 feet of the hoop, but it's almost because he's like too patient when he's in the lane. Like, he's always trying to make the right decision, and he's only turned the ball over 8.6% of the time as the pick and roll ball handler, And that's the absolute best mark among 50-something players who have jump-started 90 or more pick-and-rolls this year. The Nets are scoring like a top-seven offense when he's on the court. His free throw rate is good relative to how often he's kind of shooting two-pointers now because he takes a lot more threes. And it's just I mean, this is my favorite stat. Four players are clearing 17 points and 8 assists per 36 minutes while swishing at least 39% of their threes this season. J.J. Barrera, because obviously J.J. Barrera. James Harden.
Who I just streamed into my fantasy team the other day and helped me win a couple categories.
He's
but go ahead.
Good. That he's part of what the Magic should do when they sell, Mavericks should do when they sell. But James Harden, LeBron James, and Spencer Dinwiddie. Like, he's just he's going to be better on defense when he doesn't have to cover some of the toughest assignments every night either, because his long-term spot might be at that two-guard position. Who knows? But I'm just it's going to be interesting what the Nets do moving forward, as now they're going to get their picks back after this year. But what happens when you need to reinvest in Caris LeVert, who's again shown flashes? Rondae Hollis-Jefferson as well, defensively, as a passer. Hollis-Jefferson's also been fairly good from mid-range this year. What happens when you have to start reinvesting in this roster is when it becomes a problem, because you don't want to be stuck in mediocrity as you get your draft picks back. So, you know, it's just
– Jaleel's going to start from day one, right?
I would think, just because Booker's gone. Mozgov is just like just Dunsky's there. It depends upon whether they're maybe just higher on Jared Allen. I know they really do like him, but he's going to get minutes because it's not going to go to Tyler Zeller. Booker's gone. They're not going to play Mozgov. So you're probably looking at the spot where Ja can get at least 20 minutes a game for the rest of the year. Maybe it's not right away, but he'll get there. So I give them a B. And I give them a B+, because this trade is just – it's a smart trade. It's no risk. Nick Stauskas comes off the books this year too. So and that would lead us to the Sixers, whom I gave an A- just because Markel Fultz isn't playing and they're still contending for a home court advantage in the Eastern Conference. Like, that's just incredible to me. Their offense still isn't great. Their defense, though, ranks 10th in points allowed per 100 possessions. They are – I'm going to let you throw out the stat because I'll stop talking very soon here. But when Covington and Simmons and Embiid just share the floor, they're destroying opponents as their bench kind of just rounds into form, and maybe Booker helps them.
He'll help,
more than Amir Johnson would. I still like Richaun Holmes and would like to see him play a little bit more. A big TLC guy. It would be interesting to me, though, if they could pull off a trade that might boost their chances this season. Like, maybe you bring in Wesley Matthews if you can get rid of Jared Bayless' salary, and you do punt on free agency this summer a little bit, but if we're being realistic, LeBron probably isn't going to Philly. And even if he does, you can trade Wesley Matthews' expiring deal at that point. But I seriously just digress. Like, they've set themselves up. It looks like they might be able to make some noise. Maybe they make it out of a first-round playoff series, which is a big deal. Ben Simmons looks like a future Hall of Famer. Embiid is in the conversation for defensive player of the year to me. It's just the Markel Fultz stuff. I might even give them an A if they're front office, and I don't want to like call out their doctors, but like, what the hell's going on with Markel Fultz? You know, had him playing through the shoulder injury, and now we're almost 2 months later, and the shoulder injury he was playing through has not allowed him to practice yet. So that's why they probably get the A- and why you could probably even go B+.
Yeah, I went A- on them too. Like you said, when they have their three main guys on the floor, they're ridiculous. And Ben Simmons averaging near a triple-double as a rookie, it's ridiculous to me how good he is right off the bat. And I get a lot of people are barking about how, oh, he's not really a rookie because he had a chance to sit out a year and observe. Even if a second-year player was doing what he's doing, it's just insane. Joel Embiid is ridiculous still. I think Robert Covington, last time I checked, is in the top 10 in the entire NBA in ESPN's real plus minus. He's been absurd. The only reason I went A-, because it's a pretty ridiculous leap to go from what they were the last 4 or 5 years to what they are now. And you would think that'd be enough for an A, but the bench and sort of the letdown when those three guys aren't on the floor, that's what takes them down to an A-. But like you said, maybe this Trevor Booker deal helps with that a little bit. I think he's an excellent energy guy. He can pass a little bit. He even showed flares of shooting when he was in Utah. I think TJ McConnell's one of the best backup point guards in the NBA. So maybe, like you said, if that bench rounds into form, suddenly this is a really, really interesting team.
Yes.
All right, I think I'm next. I'm going to go with...
You have to go twice in a row because I kind of hijacked your turn, so just keep that in mind.
Fine. I'm going to go with the Pistons. I gave the Pistons a B. They have cooled off quite a bit. I think they just finished off an 0-4 road trip. So I would have had them quite a bit higher, I think, had it not been for that. The guy that's impressed me the most, and I think I've talked about him every episode of the show, like the last three or four, I cannot get over what Andre Drummond is doing this season. In his first five seasons, he handed out a total of 277 assists for 5 years combined. This year, he's on pace for 328 assists. And I think it's really altered who they are as a team. Reggie Jackson is back to the form that he was at before last season, his first full season in Detroit. Avery Bradley, I think, is fitting pretty well. I think Luke Kennard's starting to show some signs. There's a lot of good things happening with Detroit. I think despite this recent slide that they're on, I'm pretty confident that they're going to make the playoffs at this point.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said there. And Andre Drummond has been impressive. Just with ditching the post-ups, his free throw shooting as well looks more engaged on the defensive end. Reggie Jackson's kind of quietly having a good year.
He's been good.
Tobias Harris.
Oh, I should have mentioned Tobias too. Yeah, go ahead.
Just spectacular offensively for them. Cooling off on how I thought he might be like an okay defender. That has kind of fallen by the wayside. Duncan Smith of Pistons Power pointed this out last night. Langston Galloway, who they hard-capped themselves for on the first day of free agency, received a did-not-play in their loss to the Bucks. And when you look at what Kentavious when you look at what Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is doing in Los Angeles defensively specifically, you know, it's just I'm still against that. I know Duncan Smith kind of played friend of the pod, and I know he was just kind of playing both sides of the fence, and he was sometimes he leaned like he was okay with it, but like that decision looked bad then, and it looks worse now, in my opinion. And it's hard to like kind of grade. You almost at one point it looked like Stan Van Gundy might be a coach of the year candidate, but then it's like, well, he made that decision. Stanley Johnson has been he's been like okay this year. I still would love to see him with a jump shot. It's Smith continues to impress. I guess they're done with him shooting threes though. It seems like he's really not allowed to do that. Avery Bradley's been good on an individual level, and we talked about this at length. In a mailbag, the defensive numbers just always aren't going to show up for him because of the way he's been used, and I think that's okay. He's a really good player, but again, when you look at what Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has done in Los Angeles, maybe you didn't want to give him 5 years and 80, but the Langston Galloway situation, like that would I'd rather have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope on the roster, and you could have circumvented the salary cap minutiae to get both him and Bradley on the same roster, so... That's where I land with them, and I think a B is a solid grade. That's what I had them as, too.
All right, I'm going to go Cavaliers next. LeBron James, just his raw numbers are mind-blowing. 28.2 points on 18.7 shots a game, shooting 59% from the field, 43% from three, a 64 effective field goal percentage, 25 games into the season, and he has a 64 effective field goal percentage. That's just crazy. 67 true shooting. 8.6 assists. 8 rebounds. 1.4 steals. 1.2 blocks. I think they've won 13 straight.
Yep.
So they are definitely... they look like a juggernaut again. I can't get over what LeBron's doing in year 15. And I think I admitted a year or two ago that I think he is now the best player in NBA history. I feel like every season he has from here on out is just sort of slowly but surely widening the gap between him and Michael Jordan. I gave the Cleveland Cavaliers a B minus, and the only reason I did is because Tyronn Lue had to intervene to show him that Derrick Rose should not be playing. And if Rose comes back to the team whenever this injury thing is resolved and instantly goes back into the starting lineup, I might have to bump him down to like a D because it should be so abundantly obvious by now that he should not be in that rotation. But like I said, LeBron's been absurd. Kevin Love is starting to pick up. The Dwayne Wade, Kyle Korver bench unit, the numbers on that are just insane. So,
oh my God, yeah.
That's the only reason I marked them down is because the Derrick Rose stuff. But they have looked ridiculous over the last basically 3 weeks now.
It's been absolutely crazy. And LeBron is, when you look at the this will change when Isaiah Thomas comes back. He's generating, in terms of the share of the Cavaliers' total offense, the fifth most of his entire career.
Jeez.
Like his 15th season. Like his 15th season. I'm with you, though.
And he's had so many minutes on those legs. It's just crazy that he's still doing this.
And I'm also – so I'm with you. I'm interested to see, like, what kind of happens with the roster. Like, what I know LeBron said the other day that he can integrate Isaiah Thomas 1-2-3 because he's been playing 2K, which is fantastic that he
said
that.
That was pretty funny.
But, like,
yeah.
The Tristan Thompson-Kevin Love dynamic is a little bit weird. Like, the Cavs, over their 13-game stretch with Kevin Love at center – 378 minutes he's been at center, and they're scoring 112.4 points per 100 possessions, which is spectacular, but they're coughing up almost 107 on the defensive end, which is 20th. Do you think about moving Thompson into the starting unit, especially because Jay Crowder hasn't been great this season, and maybe he's just a little bit better off the bench for you at this point? Do you leave Tristan Thompson coming off the bench because they're one – it hasn't even been a weakness over this 13-game stretch, but like they've been better on offense than they are on defense. So I don't know what you do. And then the Derrick Rose thing, if you look at the numbers, that Calderon led or piloted, whatever you want to call it, starting lineup has been absolute fire on the offensive end. Why mess with it? Maybe Derrick,
I don't know if you caught this, but I think it was yesterday. I said Calderon's averaging 2.5 points per game and is like clearly better for this team than Derrick Rose.
Right. So it's like, I don't know. They have some interesting – they're good problems I have. They have, I guess, but they're still – you know, they're interesting questions for them. But they've been – you know, their defense – their offense is fine, but their defense has ranked sixth in points allowed per 100 possessions over this 13-game stretch. They're not giving up nearly as many wide-open threes. They're just – they're trying harder generally. And if you get Jay Crowder just to play better overall at some point this season, you become a much – better team, in my opinion. And Dwayne Wade has been like okay on defense this year too. We talk about, you know, what he does as a facilitator for those bench units, and he might be, when you look at what's happened with Lou Williams having to start in Los Angeles, perhaps that'll change when Teodosic comes back, but Tyreke Evans starting in Memphis now, Dwayne Wade might really have a case to be one of the two or three top candidates for sixth man of the year, as LeBron called him the number one guy, but he might be in the top three. So I ended up giving this team a B+ because they've navigated injuries, and now they're on this 13-game winning streak. They've kind of righted the ship, maybe
by
default.
I almost feel like injuries have helped them.
Right, that's why by default.
Yeah.
I'm prepared to give them a B+, though, just because LeBron's been spectacular, and Dwayne Wade is finally – however Tyronn Lue did it passive-aggressively, whatever, like he's on the bench now, and like that's working. And they're really riding the Kevin Love at center stuff offensively. What will define their grade for the halfway mark is how they react to, like, you know, how do you incorporate Tristan Thompson? What are you doing with Derrick Rose? What are you doing with Isaiah Thomas?
One more note before we move off the Cavs. I mentioned that Korver Wade bench lineup. Korver Wade and LeBron have shared the floor for 215 minutes. They're scoring 123.7 points per 100 possessions, and they're allowing 94.4. Net rating of 29.3.
That seems like really, really, you know, good. Don't call me an expert.
That trio is insane. I think I took my two, so it's back to you.
The one note I'll add, though, is that that Calderon starting lineup is scoring almost 114 points per 100 possessions over the past. They've played 10 games in the last 13.
He doesn't even have to shoot, and he's better for the team than Rose.
Yeah. So, it's just – and, you know – it's just I can't get over the bench. Like that's just like that. That's just
yeah.
Incredible.
It's crazy.
This one's crazy to me. The Fry, Jeff Green, Kyle Korver, Osmond Wade lineup has logged 32 minutes across 8 games over the Cavaliers' last 13. They are a shit show on defense. They're scoring 125.7 points per 100 possessions. Like it's just, the things are just working for them. But anyway, so I gave them a B+. I'm going to move on to the Atlanta Hawks. I gave them a C+. They're dealing with not only are they dealing with a lot of injuries right now, but it's all their quality big men. Dwayne Dedman, Mike Muscala, John Collins. I credit Budenholzer. Maybe it was an edict from the front office, but like he was gradually playing John Collins more, who has been superb. I still find the Hawks sometimes fun to watch. I'm a big Taurean Prince guy. I kind of like what DeAndre Bembry can do on defense, and he also just seems like this. He's basically a shooting guard who to me like rebounds like a big, or looks like he could eventually be that guy who's just going to be dominant on the glass for his position. He might already be there, and he's also a sneaky good passer. I love Luke Babbitt. You know I love Luke Babbitt, or at least you should know I love Luke Babbitt. But what's been disappointing, more people on this team seem to have the green light from three, and yet the Hawks to me aren't really shooting enough of them. They rank 12th in pace right now, and I'm disappointed there too because I thought that they would be faster. And they're also just not getting out in transition as much with someone who's just kind of like as springy as Dennis Schroeder and reckless. You'd think that would be that they would rank higher on that scale as well. And they don't have like a great backup point guard situation, obviously. That factors into it too. You have, you know, guys like Isaiah Taylor getting minutes. But I don't know. They've been disappointing and fun at the same time.
Yeah, I went C+ for them as well. I think that this really bad record that they have, it's 5-19. It's not much better or worse than we could have expected coming into the season. They were a clear tanker. As we headed into the year, I was a little disappointed at Collins' minutes at the beginning of the season, but like you said, those have kind of been ticking upwards. They have other interesting players. Like you said, Taurean Prince is interesting to me. Tyler Kavanaugh suddenly come out of nowhere to be – it's now 15 games worth of solid basketball from him. I thought it was maybe just a novelty for those first couple appearances that he's had, but he's been solid. John Collins is – I mean, he's really the main thing that I lean on for this team. He's averaging 18 points, 11.1 rebounds, and 1.3 blocks per 36 minutes and shooting 59% from the field. I think the first person I heard make the DeAndre Jordan comparison was you, but I've seen it from more people since you first brought it up. And it's almost like there's a chance that he's DeAndre Jordan's sort of movement and athleticism with a little bit more skill, which is really scary to think about. I think they have a ton of potential there. So anyway, like I said, this is kind of about where we should have expected them to be, and so I'm going to go with the C+ on them as well. Next, I'm going to go with the Magic and leave a certain Eastern Conference team for you.
Speaking of cooling off, right?
Yeah. Boy, the Magic, I'm pulling up right now as we speak. Their start was insane, and I think everybody kind of expected them to come back down to earth. But they were 6-2 at one point, had one of the best offenses in the league. Since that 6-2 start, they're 5-13, and they've actually won a few recently. They're 3-2 over their last five. So very up and down with a huge down part. There's a lot of individual players who are playing well. I think Aaron Gordon should probably still be a most improved player candidate. He's still shooting over 40% from three, which is surprising to me.
Freezing cold kind of lately, though.
Yeah. I mean, he was over 60 the last time we spent a lot of time on the Magic on the podcast, so that's a pretty significant drop. Evan Fournier's been good. Vucevic has been good, although he's cooled off significantly too. But I went C- just because this recent stretch has been really bad. I feel like the beginning showed us what they maybe could be, and to see them fall off that quickly was a little bit disappointing to me.
They need to tank. That's just where I'm at with them. Like, it's just,
yeah,
you know, see where you could trade Nikola Vucevic, maybe get off Fournier to a team that might be willing to use him as like a, I don't know, like he's probably best as your, what did you say, third best player or something. Jonathan Simmons has been good for them. I still like Terrence Ross. He's on a good deal when he comes back from injury. Elfrid Payton is just weird. Maybe he'll pick up second half of the year like he normally does. Gordon's restricted free agency is going to be incredibly intriguing because what do you pay him? Like, especially if his offensive numbers continue to like depress efficiency.
I think somebody will max him out.
I mean, we'll see. But I'm kind of with you there. They've just have not been good lately. I'm going to give them a C. And I think they should be doing more stuff for Vucevic, who is probably still their best player. It might be Gordon at this point. He's more versatile on the defensive end. So I shouldn't say that. But I think they need to do more stuff for Vucevic overall. But what they really need to be looking at this point, and how I'm going to grade them when we're at the halfway point, is going to be, did they look to sell off? Because they're not a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. Like, it's just, they're right now, they're three games out of the eighth seed, and that's with the Heat underachieving and the Hornets underachieving. So you kind of have to throw them in there when you're looking at, can you make the postseason or not? I'm a big fan of Jonathan Isaac, by the way, and I eventually think that those Gordon at the five with Isaac at the four lineups could be super fun, and I'd like to see Frank Vogel experiment more with those.
That's what I want to see more than anything, is those, a front court with those two.
And the Magic are running faster, but I would still like to see them shoot more threes as well. So I don't – his job, Vogel's, might be on the hot seat just because he's not the first choice of this regime. Like, they inherited him. That'll be something else to watch. I don't think it happens during the middle of the season unless they rattle off, like, I don't know. I mean, they just survived, like, a terrible stretch. Unless they do something worse than that, he's probably safe through this year. They just don't have a true – they don't have a surefire franchise cornerstone. I don't think you can look at Aaron Gordon and say that's it. And that's a problem for them, but what kind of contributes to them getting a C, could, because I think they could be worse. Their defense has just been awful with some of their quote-unquote best lineups on the floor. They're really giving Gordon some more freedom on the offensive end and trying to figure out if he is going to be that cornerstone. They need to switch him more on defense, I think, because he's still improving as an isolation defender, and it's just fun when you can see him fly all over the place. He'll probably never be a great rim protector, but he can defend like a wing in a lot of different spots, even though the Magic's defensive rating is absolute crap when he's on the floor. But they're running him. He's smarter now on offense. He's making quicker passes. He's using fewer dribbles, it seems. He's more happy to work off the ball, and now that you're able to leverage that three-point shot that we believe he has, that's a bright spot for them, and I think they're doing the right thing with regard to how heavy they're leaning on him. But I need to see more, like, of a rebuilding mindset over the next quarter of the season. Unless you have anything to add, we are left with the New York Knicks.
Yep.
I'm curious to hear. I want to flip it on you. What did you give them? I want to hear your explanation first.
I gave the Knicks a B minus. I didn't think they would be anywhere near playoff contention with this roster. I was really interesting to see what Kristaps Porzingis would look like as the, like, bona fide, clear-cut number one guy. For the first 10-11 games of the season, he was spectacular. He's cooled off quite a bit over the last I did this morning. It was the last nine games. So over his last nine, this is taking longer than I love, 19.3 points, 39% from the field, 40 from three. He's cooled off a lot, but, like, long story short, he's been good. Enes Kanter, to have him as a positive player, it's just not something that a lot of coaches can say they've ever been able to achieve, especially on the defensive end. So for Jeff Hornacek to unlock something in him is crazy to me. Tim Hardaway has rebounded from a terrible start to look a little bit better. Doug McDermott, another guy who's having a much more positive impact than he has at any other point in his career. I just think there's a lot of individual guys you can point to on this team that are exceeding expectations. And like I said, I could not have imagined they'd be a 500 team a quarter of the way into the season, but that's where they are. And maybe you could honestly ding them for that, because, like you've said in a few episodes, they should probably be trying to tank. But I think just from a purely basketball standpoint, they have definitely been better than I expected.
Courtney Lee's been spectacular too. I go back and forth on this team, and I settled on a C-minus because I just don't think they're really – I said this with the Magic. I don't think they're assuming a rebuilding mindset enough, and that's where you need to be. And, you know, yes, Tim Hardaway Jr. has been good, but this is – I don't think this really factors in the Knicks' career. I just want to remind everyone that his deal is still a piece of shit. Like, it's just – no, because the goal in free agency is to get value. I don't care that he's playing well.
Yeah.
Because you could have had him for less, so you failed. Like, I just want that to get out of the way. Kristaps Porzingis' season has been spectacular, but But it makes me uncomfortable. Like, some of his shot, because he can shoot over guys, like, he's shooting so much from no man's land. 27.8% of his attempts are coming between 10 and 16 feet. He's shooting 51.4% on those looks. And it's because he can just shoot over these guys, which is the advantage to having him at power forward. You can't have centers defend him because then they have to step out on the perimeter, and most of the power forwards just aren't big enough to hold up. It's just he's also the reason why, by the way, that Enes Kanter is like a plus rim protector this year. When you look relative to the league average, no one has saved more value at the rim than Kristaps Porzingis, and he's doing this while defending less shots at the rim than last year because he's a power forward. So he's contesting threes, chasing some guys out on the perimeter. The Knicks' defense is not good when he's on the floor still, because the Knicks' defense is just not really all that great in general. They are, like, I don't know, like, I'm just, they're, you know what they're the worst at? They just don't know how to coax teams into mid-range jumpers. They just don't have those defenders. They're dead last when looking at opponent shots coming at the rim or from behind the three-point line. 71.2% of their opponent shots, according to Cleaning the Glass, come from those two areas combined. That's the worst mark in the league by almost 2%, by the way. Yeah, it's terrible. So they need to do something about that, and I would like to see them tank, and you know this. I want to see even more Frank Ntilikina, who's really smooth. Jarrett Jack has been surprising, like you said, but they need to be, and this is how I will grade them when we're looking ahead to the second half of the season, is are they going to – they could probably get a first-round pick for Courtney Lee right now, I would hazard, because his contract isn't bad. Adam Frommel wrote something for Bleacher Report where it actually graded out in this objective formula as the fifth best at the shooting guard position, like, to value that he was providing. So I think that's what they need to be doing at this point, and I don't know that they have it in them. But Kristaps Porzingis has been fantastic, and you know he's a superstar, and they're milking him, which I was worried that Tim Hardaway Jr. was going to take away from his touches, and even the same with Michael Beasley, but they don't even really play him that much. So I've been impressed with that. Just looking at some of the stuff that they do, though, I don't think Kristaps should be taking as many of those mid-range jump shots. I get he's making them. I get it. But, you want your offense to be elite. And right now you're over the last 15 games, they're 12th in points scored per 100 possessions. They're also, mind you, like, benefiting. And I really – this is what factored into my grade as well. Like, they've had a home-heavy schedule. They have not been good on the road at all this year. And you look at their net rating on the road, they're being outscored by 13.3 points per 100 possessions overall, third worst mark in the league, in front of only the Bulls and the Kings, who are probably the two worst teams in the league, certainly two of the three worst if you want to throw the Hawks in there, and they're 1-7 on the road. So I just don't have a lot of optimism for the team this season, and don't think they should be chasing a playoff spot. The final quick note would be, we have to remember all of this needs to be relative to their future, which is not exceedingly bright when you look at their cap situation. So if you're going to end up with 30-something wins this year and have this low-level lottery pick, like, you've missed an opportunity to add a real impact player at a time when you're probably not going to have the cap flexibility or trade assets, for that matter, to acquire one for the next 2 or 3 years.
And you said you gave him a C-?
Yeah. That was – This was probably one of the bigger ones we differentiated on, too. You were at B-, right?
Yeah. I just thought they've definitely played better than I expected. But I get the argument. They should probably, like we said in a couple episodes previously, just tell Kristaps go home and get that surgery.
after the All-Star break, let him get his start, and then let's go.
Yeah. I think that gets us through the entire Eastern Conference. We optimistically thought it might go a little quicker without a guest this time, but we are at about an hour and 40 minutes again. To those of you who stuck out the entire thing, kudos to you guys. We're very proud of you. I wish I had some sort of prize to give you here at the end for listening to us this long, but it's just going to be more plugs. You can follow Dan on Twitter at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show's at Hardwood Knox. Most of you probably already follow NBA at NBA underscore math, the host site for Hardwood Knox. Please review the podcast, rate the podcast if you haven't already. If you have, commandeer your friends and family members' phones and do so for them on their phones. Subscribe for them too. That would be just a wonderful Christmas gift for them. I'm sure they would be very excited to have our episodes waiting for them each and every morning that we publish. Until next time, we leave you with the shout out to, I would say, the one and only, but now there's two. There's Kyle Anderson and Bina Udry.